Hello, welcome to the Melanin Initiative, the premier nursing podcast made specifically for you. Yes, you. We know your time is valuable and something you can't get back, so we want to help you navigate the complicated healthcare world from our perspective without giving you too much information at once, hence the name TMI. So let's begin.
Oh, why is it? Oh. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the TMI podcast. Today's episode is going to be all about the patient experience. So we'd like to start off by defining what the patient experience is. Patient experience encompasses the range of interactions that patients have with the healthcare system, including their care from health plans, from doctors, nurses, staff, in the hospitals, in the outpatient setting, as far as like physician practices, and other healthcare facilities. As an integral component of the healthcare quality, patient experience includes several aspects of healthcare delivery that patients value highly when they seek and receive care, such as getting timely appointments, easy access to information, whether that be online through like patient portals, and good communication with healthcare providers. This episode is important because we want to help people manage their expectations when it comes to navigating the healthcare system, whether it's inpatient, outpatient, physical therapy setting, things like that. So we just want to kind of give patients an idea of what to expect when they go into those settings. Our TMI takeaway for today's episode is that you are your best advocate. You have rights that should be respected, but you also have the responsibility to participate in your healthcare and manage your health outside of the clinical setting. Communication is key. It's very important to know that you are one of the key players as far as your healthcare is concerned. And then the themes for today's episode are communication, safety, and advocacy. So we're going to be touching a lot on that throughout today's episode.
Okay, so I'm going to walk you through the patient experience. So let's say, for instance, you're at home, it's a Sunday evening or a Monday morning, even better, on your way to work, you think. But then you have, so actually on Sunday night, you develop this stomach ache. You might take some Tylenol, thinking by the time you wake up, it's going to be gone. Wake up Monday morning, it's worse. Maybe it's even 5 a.m. Now you take yourself to the emergency department. When you get to the emergency department, you go to the desk, they ask your name, and they ask you what brought you there. You tell them your symptoms. So what they're going to do is something called triage. So first of all, the emergency department or the ED is a room full of sick patients. Everyone there is sick. So what they're going to do is they're going to rank you in order of your severity of sickness and in order of who is going to be more affected by the time of that treatment, right? So if you're coming in with something like a heart attack or a stroke, you're automatically going to go to the top of the list. So even if you're coming in with your abdominal pain, you've been there for 5 hours, if I walk in right behind you with chest pain or symptoms of a stroke, I automatically get bumped to the top of the line. Okay. And that's something people don't understand. The other thing that's going to happen in the emergency room is you might not get your home medications. You might not eat. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't get cleaned up because all they're really there to do is decide, can we treat you here and send you home? Do you need to stay for a few hours and get some treatment and then go home? Or do you need to get a bed? That's the main objective of the emergency department. They're not doing anything else after that. So now we've decided your stomach pain is severe enough that we want to keep you in the hospital. Maybe overnight, maybe a couple of days. We don't know yet. We're still deciding, but it's severe enough that we're going to keep you. So now you have to wait to get a bed. In order for you to get a bed, someone else has to leave the bed. There are two ways in the hospital people leave a bed. One, they get discharged, and the other one people don't like to think about. Fill in the blank there, okay? So now you've waited, you get this bed, you get transported upstairs. I don't know, for a number of reasons. People come upstairs, and then they're surprised that they're there. I'm just like, I know they told you were coming up here. But for whatever reason, the hospital is a very overwhelming situation. Yeah. That's part of the reason we even exist as a podcast, because it is overwhelming. There's a lot of information going on. You're not thinking clearly because you're in pain, you're sick, you're hurting. A number of things are happening. You're alone and you're seeing a bunch of strangers. And like I said, you're on your way to work. Your mind was focused on all the things you need to do at your desk on Monday morning. So now you're upstairs, now you're sort of your hospitalization is beginning. That nurse is going to ask you all the questions again, because now you're actually staying in the hospital and we want to confirm that what was said downstairs is still accurate. So we're going to ask you all those questions, put you in the computer. That doctor you saw in the emergency department, you're never going to see them again. Their job was just to admit you, to make that decision, get treated, go home, or get admitted. That's it. You're never going to see them again. Now that you're in the hospital, the doctors in the hospital are in charge of your care. Not your primary care, not your specialist that you've seen for 20 years, because they don't practice in acute care. The hospital is set up for acute care. Acute care means a temporary situation, or it's temporary enough that we treat whatever's going on, it stabilizes, and you can go home. Acute issues, abdominal pain, chest pain, a really, 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 really bad headache, but not primary care issues that are being supposed to be managed by your primary care doctor. Unfortunately, in this country, people are really, really sick. We're living longer, and the demand on care is much greater than the number of providers we have to treat people. So we're putting a lot of effort into primary care, teaching you how to use lifestyle behaviors to avoid getting really sick. Mm-hmm. That's supposed to be managed by your primary care. Unfortunately, people don't see their primary care. They hope things go away. And when they don't go away, they get so bad that they can't get an appointment. And they can't even wait for that appointment. So they end up in the emergency room, and the emergency department becomes their primary care provider. But all specialists, including the emergency department in the hospital, are assuming that you have a primary care provider, because that's the way it's a system. Healthcare is a system. Everybody's supposed to play their role. The hospital helps you get better, and then the primary care provider continues to take care of you after that. Like I like to say is the hospital is like a babysitter. They're responsible. They're equipped, they're knowledgeable. They can take care of you, but they don't do it forever. Mm-hmm. Primary care is your parent. They're responsible. They're going to take care of you from head to toe. They care about every single organ, not like a specialist who only cares about that one organ. So that's my soapbox for the emergency department. We'll revisit that one, because it's it's a really big issue. Because when you have people who are really, really sick and actually need to be in the emergency department, in the same room competing for a bed with people whose issues are supposed to be managed by primary care.
They miss dialysis, stuff like that.
You end up with an emergency department that's overloaded and full, and there's not enough beds for everyone. And technically what ends up happening is your primary care issue, you get frustrated because we're doing too much. Because you are, you know, you just have this issue that can properly and safely be managed by your primary care provider. So you don't know why we're running all these tests, taking all this blood for this issue that you've been dealing with for 30 years. Okay, that should be handled by primary care. But we'll get into it later. So now you have this abdominal pain, you're admitted to the hospital, the nurses ask you a bunch of questions, now you're in the computer. A lot of people get admitted overnight. Not a lot's going to happen overnight, people. Okay. Yeah. We're going to continue to monitor you, give you medications, check your blood pressure, your blood sugar if we need to, and your vitals. But the main thing is just to keep people stable so they can make it to the morning. So when the
Kimberly knows, she's a night shift.
When the day team comes. So at night, you know what happens? A couple of things happen at night. One, people don't want to be bothered, but the hospital is a 24/7 operation. Yeah. If you're sick, you want us to be keeping eye on you. Okay. The other thing is not a lot happens at night, because the day team isn't there. They're your parents. They're in charge of everything. At night, the babysitters are making sure everyone lives, everyone survives. And if there is an emergency, we can take care of it. Okay. So now you're in the hospital. We take care of your abdominal pain. We find out, you know, it was colitis. You had some diarrhea, ate something you shouldn't have. We give you some hydration. While you're there, we've been taking your vitals every 4 hours, and we notice that your blood pressure is really high. First, we thought it was related to the pain, so we took care of your pain, but it didn't go away. So now you've been in the hospital, let's say 48 hours, 2 days. Your diarrhea is better. Everything's better. Blood work looks great. You feel better, but your blood pressure is still high. So blood pressure is not, once we get it stable, is not an acute issue. It's a primary care issue. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to discharge you and send you back to your primary care provider to manage that blood pressure. Before you leave, though, the night's over, it's the morning, the day team comes on. When your doctor gets there in the morning, they're going to go through everybody's chart. And again, it's that whole triage idea. Who's the sickest of the sickest? Mm-hmm. I'll see those patients first and make my way down the list. As I see each patient, I'm making a decision. Do they need to stay and continue to get treated, or can they get discharged? Every single morning, that's what they're deciding. If they need to get discharged, now we're talking to case management, social work. What's physical therapy saying about how long they need to stay? Physical therapy. In the hospital, physical therapy is making an assessment. Mm-hmm. Is this person strong enough to go home independently and walk and talk like they were before, take care of themselves, feed, dress, bathe? Or do they need a little bit of assistance at home? Okay, do we need to set up home health? Do they need a walker? Do they need a commode? Because in a couple of days, moving back around again, they're going to be fine. Or do they need to go to rehab because they spent so much time in the bed that now they're not strong enough to go home and take care of themselves? And not only are they not strong enough, it's not safe. That is, we're always thinking about your safety. And so physical therapy, all they're doing is making an assessment. They're going to do that assessment, work with you a couple of days, and then they're going to make a referral recommendation to the doctor. They're not there to do exercise with you every day. They're not going to come see you three times a day and get you stronger. It's not the same as when you go to a rehab facility where around the clock, the idea is to get you stronger. Because this is, again, acute care. We're only taking care of those things that need to be treated right now. So physical therapy decides, you know what? They're strong enough. They can go home. They can go home. So now the nurses said, yeah, they're good to go. Physical therapy said they're good to go. Case manager said they don't need anything. Their family's going to pick them up and take them home. Well, the doctor's like, well, look at this blood pressure. It's been high the whole time they've been here. I'm going to write them a referral, send them back to their primary care provider. I may or may not call their primary care provider. If they've given me enough information and they invoke enough confidence, I might not call the primary care provider. But if there's a little inkling, like I might need to confirm with them what medications they've been on, their history, then I might call the primary care provider. Other than that, primary care is not, they don't specialize in acute care anymore. Even though most of us train in an acute care setting, once you move on to a different environment and setting as a clinician, you're no longer a specialist in that setting. Yes, you can still understand that blood pressure is an issue, but you don't do those medications anymore. Mm-hmm. They become, it's like that whole saying, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's why they're trusting, they're depending on, they're counting on primary care, because your endocrinologist, your cardiologist. Well, I almost said cardiologist. I was like, no, they actually should know. So your neuro ortho. People, ortho, they only care about your bones.
Bones, that's it.
Okay, everything else is a no-go. Anybody else besides primary care and cardiology, they don't do blood pressure anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay? If it came down to it, they know where to go. They know where to find the answer.
They know who to call. Yeah.
Okay? So anyway, we're discharging you from the hospital. We've taken your blood once every 24 hours because we can't just look at you and tell that everything's better. We have to take your blood to see if the medications we're giving you are affecting your kidney or your liver or any your electrolytes, if you're getting anemic or developing an infection. So every 24 hours, as long as the numbers are moving in the right direction, you only get stuck one time. If you have, if you're dehydrated, if you have an issue with drug abuse, kidney, liver, chemo, if you're overweight or swollen, it might be really, really hard to find your blood vessels, and we might have to stick you more than once. We don't like it any more than you do. We hate it, okay? But it's our job. We're trying to help you get better. So we only do what is considered medically necessary. But this is a great point to mention that the hospital is not a prison. It's a hospital. And it's not a hotel.
It's not a hotel.
So you
ding,
have,
ding, ding.
You can always speak up. You always have options.
Absolutely.
You always have options as a patient. You can choose not to take a recommendation as long as you understand the consequences of saying yes to something and saying no to something.
Absolutely.
So anyway, now you get discharged and I send you to Geraldine.
So I, in the primary care setting, so you come to me and we're going to kind of use the example that Kimberly gave with the patient having abdominal pain. They got that under control, patient's feeling better. However, that blood pressure still remains elevated. While in the hospital, they're going to manage your blood pressure, make sure it's, you know, at an acceptable range where you're not in an emergency, like where you can run the risk of a heart attack or a stroke. But once again, you need to follow up with your primary care provider, which is me. So typically in the clinical setting, what you would expect is that you come in, we might discuss your recent hospitalization and talk about if your blood pressure numbers, and then usually we'll do an evaluation of the blood pressure in the clinic and go from there. Typically, we don't diagnose high blood pressure based off of that one reading. We do take your the readings that you had in the hospital, and then we typically do more than one reading on two different occasions, two different visits in the clinical setting. Based on the numbers, based on different factors that are going on in your life, we can either say, you know, we can try managing it either by recommending lifestyle modifications, such as diet, exercise, and things like that. If you're a smoker, we recommend like quitting smoking, just things that will help decrease that blood pressure. And then if necessary, then we manage, if necessary, we'll add on medication. But that also goes with monitoring. So my job is to monitor your treatment plan. And it also comes with getting your blood drawn to make sure, like if we are putting you on medication, we still have to, you know, we're not doing it as every 24 hours, like in the hospital, but it might be every 3 months, every 6 months, or every year, just to make sure that the medications are one, working, and two, that they're not affecting your kidneys, your liver negatively, because as you know, all medications have side effects. So we just want to make sure that it's safe. And let's say what you're on is not working or is affecting an organ, we can switch it to something else. So that's what's very, very important. That's the reason why it's very important to see your primary care doctor. Once again, the ED is not your primary care doctor. We tend to overuse, our society tends to overuse the emergency department. So we definitely want to recommend or promote the primary care setting for patients to come in and have like their chronic care conditions managed or their less severe or acute conditions managed.
Well, Kimberly and Geraldine, you've given all of us a lot to think about. So I want to wrap some things up for us. You brought up some key points that I would like to emphasize. The first point would be communication. I know you've heard it, and I know it's cliche, but communication is key. So coming back to the scenario that Kimberly and Geraldine expressed, say we're in the scenario where you have this abdominal pain, they discovered you have high blood pressure, also known as hypertension, and they prescribe a medication or they start you on a medication and have you follow up with your outpatient provider. Now, you didn't communicate that you don't swallow pills very well. Now, that poses a problem, right? If we sent you home with an oral medication, a pill, but you're not able to swallow pills, we've sent you home with this unsafe discharge plan. Now, everything, we checked all of our boxes. High blood pressure, we gave you a pill, we expect the blood pressure to lower, and then we want you to follow up with your primary care. That's kind of how that run-of-the-mill worked. However, the piece that was missing was the communication from you letting us know that plan is not going to work for me. And we run into that a lot of times. People come back to the hospital and or have a readmission. And we're like, what happened? We set up a good plan for you. And they're like, yeah, you did, but I don't have a car. So I couldn't go to my outpatient appointment. We're like, that is problematic, isn't it? So communication is key. And that also leads us to advocacy. You have to advocate for yourself. No one is going to know you like you. And even when you don't have, if you are not able to speak for yourself, you have to have someone in your space and around you to speak for you. Now, nursing, it's part of our job to be your advocate, but we're also getting to learn you, especially in those beginning days or hours of your stay. Now, you know, we've all taken care of patients that have been on our units for months, and then we get to know their ins and outs and how they like to wake up and what kind of drink they want to go to sleep and what side they like to lay on at night. We learn those things as your nurse. But once again, that takes time. And even still, even if I've taken care of you for months, no one's you are your best advocate. And we actually will dive a little deeper into advocacy in future episodes, but it's so important that we're going to mention it now too. And then another point that I really wanted to emphasize is patient safety. So from the minute you get there to the minute you're discharged, we are responsible for you. And we have certain regulatory standards that we have to uphold.
state or city standards that we have to uphold. And we're going to do everything that we can do to make sure that you remain safe while you're under our care. Now, some of these things you are not going to like. So you came in with that abdominal pain and you looked a little shaky when you walked through the door. That nurse is going to say, hey, call me before you get up. And then we know you're going to get up anyway. So guess what? We're going to put a nice little alarm on your bed so that we know that you're even thinking about getting up. And you may get a little mad at us and say, why is that thing beeping every time I move my leg? And we get it. It could be annoying. It could be a little intrusive. However, the bottom line is patient safety. And all of us, every clinician, doctors, nurses, PTOT, everybody, our number one goal is to keep you safe. So we're going to do what we have to do to keep you safe. And that, if that's the bottom line, I would say any of us as a clinician, when you're working inpatient, outpatient, wherever, our number one goal is to keep you safe. It doesn't always feel that way, but I promise you that is our number one goal. So
I just want to add a little bit about the communication. So I thought you brought up a really great point on the patient's participation when it comes to that. So I think one of the biggest things I just want to emphasize is that we give a lot of information and we assume that you understand if you don't ask questions or you don't ask us to repeat or reiterate something so that you can understand. In my experience, that is like one of the biggest issues patients face is that the provider gives them information and they don't understand it. And then they go home. And once you leave our presence, you're in charge of your healthcare. And so you have to know as much as I know, because you're going to be taking over from there. And then on the safety issue, so she talked about inpatient safety and also outpatient safety. For instance, if we're writing prescriptions, we have systems in place where we can check other pharmacies that you've been to double check that we're not overdosing you. And so those are some safety measures that we take. And whether you're in the hospital or outpatient, it's always good to have someone by your side in terms of an advocate.
Absolutely. So today's themes were communication, safety, and advocacy. Remember, everything we do in healthcare is based around keeping you safe. It's our job to explain things in a way that makes sense to you. It's your job to ask questions and let us know when you don't understand something. Everyone needs an advocate. I'm going to say that one again. Everyone needs an advocate. No one can remember everything. We all need someone who can be objective, but who also has our best interest in mind. Before we leave, we want to make sure you know the emergency department is not your doctor. The hospital is specifically for acute care, temporary conditions. The ED is like the babysitter. They take care of you and send you back to your parents. Your primary care provider is the parent. They care about you from head to toe. They are responsible for managing everything from medications to referrals. All the specialists, including the ED, is expecting your primary care provider to be managing and coordinating care. If you don't have a primary care provider, the hospital can provide you a list of referrals, but you have to communicate and ask. In healthcare, there's often too much information and not enough time. Here at the Melanin Initiative, we avoid TMI by breaking things down into language you can understand. We create a safe space to ask questions and share our nursing perspective without taking too much of your time. Thanks for tuning in and join us every week for TMI Tuesdays at 10.
See you next week. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode and we didn't give you too much information. Join us next Tuesday at 10 for a new episode of the Melanin Initiative.